You're listening to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer. Now, in the studio, local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, the Sunday, March 31st show. I am Tina Mitchell, Mortgage Diva, and sitting to my left is my co-host, the Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer. How's it going?
Good, Tina. How are you doing?
I'm great. Excited to have our guest in studio.
Another great week.
First time. Been trying to get him in studio forever.
I know, they're busy guys.
That's going to be a great show. Thanks for taking time to talk money. Mike and I are here every Sunday on 570 KVI at 2 p.m., bringing in expert advice and inside knowledge on today's events in our local economy and how it can affect your money. As always, you can reach Mike and I at 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, hold that number, 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. Mike, why don't you go ahead and introduce our two guests today?
Well, yeah, we've got Greg Barrett and Mike Rozelle with Rozelle Barrett. And they're agents that we obviously, Tina, we work with. We've done a lot of business with these guys. These guys have been around.
Proud to be a part of their team.
Proud to be a part of their team. And these guys have got a lot of great knowledge to share with us, and we're going to kind of talk about some unique strategies that maybe a lot of listeners have not heard before about how these guys go about doing the real estate business. So looking forward to it.
Sounds great. And Mike, I think it might be some time for some money chat.
Money, money, money.
Okay, so Tina, I've got a, you know, me and my articles here. This article is called...
I'm excited to hear this one.
Yeah, so this is called What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast. So this is like a makeover to your morning. And this was an article that was written by Laura Vanderkam. And
so I'm going to use this as a challenge. I'm going to do it every morning until I get through them.
Okay. All right, we'll see.
Maybe.
This has got some good stuff here. So be careful before you say that.
Oh, okay.
You don't know what I'm about to tell
okay.
you here. But this was an article that was taken out of Success Magazine. So basically, she went on to say that according to the National Sleep Foundation's 2011 Sleep in America poll, I didn't know that existed, the average 30 to 45-year-old claims to get out of bed around 5:59 a.m. Not 6, but 5:59.
Because you know I get up at 6.
Just that one extra minute, you know, on a typical weekly morning, with 46 to 64-year-olds kind of bragging that they get out of bed at 5:57. Yet many people don't start work until 8 or 9 o'clock. So the question is, what are these people doing, right? Well, that's what we're going to talk about. When people are frazzled from, you know, getting up in the morning, having to deal with their kids, battling traffic, standing in line at Starbucks for 20 minutes to get their coffee, it's no wonder, the article goes on to talk about, by the time people actually get to their office, why they don't start work right away. And it's because they finally have gotten to their office, they can close their door, and they finally have, like, peace and quiet, right? Because they're not getting it at their house. And that's why they're, you know, so they're getting on Facebook or they're checking personal emails or whatever, but they're not actually working as soon as they get to work. So anyway, so she went on to talk about her conclusion from studying, like, the time logs and the profiles of high-achieving people is, you know, it's kind of interesting what they do with their mornings. And obviously most of them are up. A lot of them are exercising by 6 o'clock in the morning, which is, that's aggressive for me. But basically, they take the mornings to do their quiet time. So they're using those mornings. They're getting up early to either work out, do yoga, meditate, pray, take the dogs for a walk, whatever they're doing. But they're having that quiet time in the morning. And most people have to get up extra early because, obviously, if you get up later, then you're having to deal with all the other hassles of the house. So anyways, the article went on to talk about that. But, like, the for example, the ex-CEO of Pepsi would basically get up and run on the treadmill, you know, but at 5:30 in the morning, would you know, get caught up on the morning news, would maybe journal, do this kind of stuff. And that seemed to be a trend out of all these top CEO executives that they interviewed, that everybody really kind of takes their morning and cherishes it. So basically, so one of the things that they had talked about, there was 5 tips to basically how to make over your mornings. And the first tip was track your time. So, you know, part of spending your time better is knowing exactly how you're spending it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you've never tried to lose weight, you know that all nutritionists basically tell you to keep a food journal. Well, one of the things that this article was talking about is to kind of track your time in the morning for a couple days. You know, now you and I were recently challenged this, but in a different way, from a guy named
Stopwatch.
A guy named Darren Hardy, who's actually the owner of Success Magazine. But he's basically said the same thing: like, take a stopwatch and click, you know, turn the stopwatch on when you're doing high achieving income producing tasks and turn it off when you're not. And out of an 8-hour day, you'll be kind of surprised to see how much time you're really spending on income producing tasks, right? It's pretty eye-opening. So anyway, so track your time in the morning and kind of pay attention to what you're really doing. Number two is kind of envision the perfect morning. Like if you're on vacation or if you had all the time in the morning, what would your perfect morning look like? You know, is it being able to sit down and have breakfast with your kids? Is it being able to get up and work out, you know, do some reading, you know, whatever it is, what does that morning look like? And then eventually, he even went to say, maybe it's, he calls it sex at dawn. Sex at dawn, you know what that
nice.
Is?
Nice, no.
Okay, yeah, sex at dawn. That,
good.
That might be another high priority for a lot of people. okay, whatever. Whatever, you know, gets these people motivated. You know, grabbing coffee, getting out the door on time. So these are all things to kind of envision what your perfect morning would look like. Mm-hmm. Number three would be think through the logistics. The good thing about filling in the morning hours with important activities is that you tend to kind of crowd them in and get those accomplished. So, for example, if you're used to taking a 15-20 minute shower, the article suggests maybe see if you can get it done in 5 or 6 minutes. If you put a timestamp to it, like I'm committed, I'm going to get in and out of the shower in 5 to 6 minutes, then you'll actually do it. Same thing with brushing your teeth and getting ready and all this kind of stuff. So kind of set your goals for the morning, like when you want to try to accomplish all these things. So map out your morning schedule. The fourth thing would be to kind of build the habit. So in creating a habit, you know, nothing really happens overnight. We all know that habits are usually created at least 30 to 90 days. But the article basically said to, you know, create a habit of doing maybe just one thing. Maybe that's getting up 15 minutes earlier, going to bed 15 minutes earlier than you normally do. And then
Darren would say compound effect, just do a
compound
little tiny
effect,
bit.
A little bit, right? And then don't try to do everything in the morning. Don't try to get the workout and the meditation and all that stuff in. Just
no fast dieting.
No fast dieting. Just pick one thing that you're currently not doing in the mornings that you would like to do and just start doing that. And once you've got that down, then try to add something, you know, else to it. So the other thing about is make sure you're able to chart your progress. You know, obviously, because habits take several days, weeks, maybe even sometimes months, just make sure you're charting your progress so you can kind of see that you're going in the right direction there. And then number five is tune up as necessary. So basically, you know, life changes, rituals can change, but, you know, that's okay. Because ultimately, you know, the amazing thing about the morning is that they always kind of feel like a new chance, right? To do the thing, to do things right. It's always a brand new beginning. So just kind of stick with it and focus on seeing those little cascades of success, they call it. You know, the most successful people know that, you know, the hopeful hours before most people are eating their breakfast are far too precious to waste or to blow on, you know, activities that just aren't basically motivating you. You can do a lot with those hours. So anyways, I just thought that was kind of an interesting article, and I don't know about you. I know that our guests in studio, I won't go into too much detail, but I would guarantee that these guys have a morning ritual.
Absolutely.
I know Mike
as
does. I know Greg
they
does.
Are,
I just,
definitely.
Well, and just their personalities. I can definitely tell they have their morning rituals of what they do. And I know you do as well, and I do as well. And you know, one of the things that I like to say is that I just love, I can speak personally about this, is that I love my mornings, and that's my time where I walk my dogs. I think about what the day is going to be. I get my workout in. Everything's handled. So anyways, I thought that would be a good little piece to share with people.
That was great. It really ties in with money as well, because when you're happy and you manage things efficiently in your personal life, it extends to, you know, to everything that we do.
That's right.
In because we're a money show.
Got to have a little bit of balance. Yep.
Yeah, I got to have a lot of balance. For me, it's pretty simple. I just focus on right now. The second, because yesterday's gone, tomorrow never comes, and if I can be mindful of where I'm at and the opportunities that are right now and how I feel, it's a pretty good way to go through life. Well, that
good
was
stuff.
Great,
yep.
Mike. Now I'm just going to tie into to financing and mortgages. You always have like the fun money chat, and I bring in the numbers.
Again,
I'm the numbers
it's
girl.
It's all balanced out.
Exactly.
We can't talk about
it
the same
is.
Thing.
It is. It's awesome. So here's a question that you want to make sure you're asking yourself that rarely people do. Should I make a larger down payment or should I buy down my interest rate? And the answer is going to really depend on a few different factors. So I want to go ahead and bring those and break them down today. Number one, how much additional money are we talking about? Second, how long do you plan on keeping your mortgage loan? Third, what is the percentage in difference for the down payment with that additional cash that you have? And the last thing to look at is where will the difference, if going towards down payment versus buying down the rate, affect maximum loan limits? So let's break them down. Starting with the first factor, how much additional money are we talking about? So if you have an extra few thousand dollars, most likely the bigger impact is going to be buying down the interest rate versus coming with an additional down payment. So let's take a look at an example. If you had a $300,000 loan and your interest rate was 3.5%, again, Mike and I don't quote wait rates on the show here. These are all hypothetical examples, and it's based on qualifying and obviously what the bond market is doing. But at a 3.5% interest rate, the principal and interest payment, not talking about taxes and insurance, just your P&I, would be $1,347 a month for a $300,000 loan. Now, let's say you had an extra $3,000 in cash to work with. Should you take that $3,000 and apply it towards buy down the interest rate, or should you take the $3,000 and apply it towards borrowing less? Well, let's take that extra $3,000 towards the down payment, so you would be borrowing less. The principal and interest would drop $14 a month. Now, let's say that you use that same $3,000 and actually applied it towards buying down the interest rate. Now, we were talking about a loan amount in our example of $300,000. So strategically, I pick easy numbers. 1% of $300,000 is the $3,000 that we have in additional cash to work with. So that means you'd actually have 1% in discount points or additional points you can pay to buy down the interest rate. Typically, 1% in discount point would equal a 0.25% buy down in interest rate. So if you were locking in at market rate at 3.5%, not paying the 1% discount point, and you had that extra $3,000 to apply towards discount instead of loan amount, that would buy down the rate to 3.25%. So the principal and interest would drop down to $1,305, and this would save you $42 a month. So instead of saving just $14 a month, by borrowing $3,000 less, you actually increase the savings by an additional $28 a month. So if you look at the amortization schedule, we're talking over the life of the loan of $15,000 in interest. Another way to analyze it is to take that additional $28 a month savings and apply it towards principal. So you're making the exact same mortgage payment. You'd knock off another $6,700 in interest. Now the interest savings would be over $21,000. Plus, you'd reduce the payoff of the mortgage of about a year just with that additional $28 a month savings. So we're talking about a really, really small amount that you wouldn't think would have that large of an impact, but it does. Now, the second factor that I mentioned was length of time that you're holding onto the loan. Kind of a rule of thumb based on now where the interest rates are at is 5 years. So if you plan on staying in the property less than 5 years, my answer is going to be exact opposite. You would actually want to apply it towards the down payment, because if you look at the difference between how much you owe in principal with the lower loan amount in that shorter than 5 year period versus what you would owe in principal with buying down the interest rate 0.25% as we used in the example, you're going to be a little bit better off. You're going to owe less in principal, lowering the loan amount. Now, if you get, and this obviously is going to depend on based on what interest rates are doing, but if you're keeping it more than 5 years, that's where you're going to start seeing the better impact on the interest buy down, and it substantially moves pretty quickly. So it's really easy to look at the numbers, look at the amortization schedule, and it'll tell you exactly what makes most sense. Now, I'd like to take it from a different angle. A lot to consider here is utilizing that difference in down payment to have a higher percentage in the actual down payment amount that you're using, if it's going to make a difference in loan program. So what I'm talking about here is on an FHA loan, you'd have a 3.5% minimum down payment requirement. If you had an additional 1.5% in down payment, you could actually push it to a 5% down payment loan. So you would never want to use that 1.5% to buy down the interest rate if you could move from a FHA loan to conventional financing. That would be the worst and most costly mistake that you could make. And the reason I'm saying that is because of the difference in the cost of mortgage insurance between FHA versus conventional financing. So let's use the same $300,000 loan amount on an FHA loan. The mortgage insurance would be 1.35 factor. So what that means for you monthly is $337. Plus, on top of that, FHA has a 1.75 premium, which would be over $5,000 that you're going to finance into your loan on top of the monthly mortgage insurance. Now, we've brought to studio before FHA recently announcing that no longer can you release the monthly mortgage insurance. That means you're going to hold on to that $337 a month for the life of the loan. The only way you can release it, it doesn't matter how much principal you pay, it doesn't matter how much property appreciation you receive, you will never release the monthly mortgage insurance on a 30-year fixed rate FHA loan. How you would eliminate it is you would have to refinance into a conventional loan. Well, here's the question you'd want to ask is, where are interest rates going to be in the future? I don't know, but they're pretty low right now. Now, if in this same example, you actually could utilize that money, that additional 1.5% to go towards a conventional financing 5% down, the monthly mortgage insurance factor would drop down to maybe 6.68%. So I say maybe because it all depends on qualifying factors, but that's a good estimate to use. So the monthly mortgage insurance would be $178 a month. The difference is $167 a month less you would pay in monthly mortgage insurance on a conventional loan versus FHA. Here's the other benefit. When you reach the 78% loan to value, how you come up with that is calculating your current loan balance and the current market value together. When that magical number hits 78%, you can go in for early removal of the mortgage insurance. Again, FHA, it's for the life of the loan. I think the best way is to be going with your financing, utilize the finance conventional, but you've heard Mike and I say many times in studio, get rid of the monthly mortgage insurance, just do a one-time buyout. Now here on the buyout, it would be on an average, 1.75% of the loan amount would cover the complete buyout of mortgage insurance. So there's no monthly mortgage insurance. And if we're comparing it with FHA, you know, on an FHA, not only do you have that $337 a month, but you also have the 1.75 up front. So you can completely eliminate it. Best thing is your buying power. If I could tell you, you have an extra $60,000 to work with in your home shopping, it's a big difference. So that's my money chat.
That's a good one.
$60,000 is a lot. On that note, our engineer is saying we got to go to commercial break. Coming up next in the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, Greg Barrett and Mike Rizal, here to talk about real estate strategies. You have to know how to compete in today's real estate environment and strategies needed to accomplish the best results right here on 570 after this short break.
Find out why so many people are referring their friends and family to the Rizal Barrett team for a great buying and selling experience in the Seattle and Greater East Side. Whether you're looking to get a great deal on a home, upside down in your mortgage and needing to sell short, or you're just looking to sell your home and want to take advantage of the market and upgrade, Rizal Barrett has extensive market knowledge, tech savviness, and the creativity that keeps their clients ahead of an ever-changing market.
This is Mike Rizal.
And this is Greg Barrett. For an exceptional buying and selling experience, go to Rizal Barrett, that's RozelleBarrett.com, or give us a call at 425-372-7443. Again, that's 425-372-7443, and find out why Rizal Barrett lives up to the slogan, first class service, first class results.
Free electricity from your roof? It's possible with solar energy. Here's Amy from Solterra Systems.
There's never been a better time to install solar in Washington, and yes, we do get enough sun. Incentives cover over 50% of the installation cost, and zero down financing is available. Enjoy watching your meter run backwards this summer by installing solar now.
Go to useyourroof.com to find out how easy it can be. That's useyourroof.com, or call 800-865-9005 to get your free site assessment from Solterra Systems.
This is the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer on Talk Radio 570 KBI. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on 570 KBI every Sunday at 2 p.m. The purpose of our show is to help our listeners understand what's really going on in our real estate market and financial arena. You can reach Tina and me at 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. So, Tina, I'm excited to introduce our two guests. I'll start off with Mike Rozelle, who's been a real estate broker since 2005, and he operates his team, Rozelle Barrett, out of the firm Realty Executives in downtown Bellevue. Mike was born and raised here in the greater Seattle area and has always had a passion for serving and leading people into success. Starting his first businesses at the age of 20, Mike owned and operated a marketing company hosting to national recognized public speakers and success coaches. That's interesting. I didn't know that. In 2003, Mike ventured into another passion of his, real estate, and was on the fast track after flipping over 40 properties within about 18 months. Gosh, that sounds
like that's a lot.
You could put a reality show around you on that. Mike decided to combine his experience in marketing with his newfound expertise in real estate and has obtained his real estate broker's license in order to serve others. Outside of business, Mike also enjoys adventures with his wife, Dana, 13 years, and their two kids, Jager and Keurig.
Yeah.
All right. And Greg Barrett, was born and raised here in the Seattle area as well. Greg graduated from Franklin High School and then served 6 years in the United States Marine Corps. Greg is well-respected in the business community and has owned and operated several marketing companies as well. I can see why you guys do so well. And is also a real estate investor who has flipped somewhere around 40 homes as well. Did you guys do that together?
We did.
Okay, that's where the numbers. I was going to say that would be kind of odd that you guys just happened to do that individually. Greg is also a broker at Realty Executives and an owner of Rozelle Barrett. And in his spare time, which I can't imagine he has too much of, but is also a pastor at the Life Change Church in Renton. And his wife, Kristen, and him have two kids, Eli and Aiden. So, guys, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, you guys.
Thanks
and I'm sure you guys
us.
Do have some time because you really embrace the team. And I think a lot of people in the real estate community just haven't quite figured it out yet. They try to be a one-man show. And really teaming up together as a partnership, as well as Mike and I do in our mortgage practice, like you guys do on the real estate side, and then building a team model around that. So I think it's really unique, the team model that you have. Let's go ahead and open it up and tell the listeners a little bit about that.
Well, we started the team as just better leverage and better service for a client. So instead of a client hiring one real estate broker to service not only the listing, but to service the buyers, the incoming leads, and everything, if you're hiring a listing specialist, you really don't want them running around with buyers all weekend long. You want them focused on what they were hired to do, mm-hmm. which is put that product in a target market or target the buyer base where you're going to get some activity on it. And so what we did is Mike and I specialize on the listing side. And so we get the marketing going, the syndication, the feeds, everything, so we can target that buyer traffic. But again, if we're servicing the listing, we don't have time to take all the buyers out and run them around all weekend long. So what we did is we actually created a buyer team within our team structure mm-hmm. to where any incoming buyer calls, that's serviced by brokers. And guess what? They don't work on listings. Yeah. All they do is they focus on buyers, so they have knowledge of every single neighborhood because they know every listing that's on the market. And they probably know potential listings that'll be coming on the market, so they're better able to service them. So I wouldn't want to be hired as a listing specialist, and then the buyer calls me and starts asking me about, certain properties, within a specific neighborhood that really mm-hmm. I haven't seen.
Sure.
The buyer's agents, they have seen those properties, so they're better versed to give you the information that you need on the buying side.
And I think in this environment, too, I mean, if you have an agent that actually is trying to do it all, you've got to ask yourself, how many transactions are they doing? And really, experience speaks, especially with what we're dealing with today. And if you don't have a lot of buyers that you've actually taken through that full contract process, you don't have the experience or the reputation in the industry that you're known. And that can cause issues in a multiple scenario.
Sure. And it's especially out of the market that we're coming out of.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a ton of short sales. 2007, I remember in July, I was telling sellers, you have to anticipate the market in every single market. Unfortunately, it was a market that was going down. So I would call people, give them the honest truth, and got called some pretty bad names. But it was about setting that expectation for the seller. And, so they knew what to expect. As far as, okay, do I increase price? Do I reduce price? The perception is still there. You know, it's our job on the listing side to still go ahead and set that expectation for everyone. So it's a lot easier for that seller knowing that, you know, we're working on the listing side. Mm-hmm. And it's always good to be able to pick up the phone and know that that broker is going to be able to answer that phone because, you know, again, they're servicing that listing.
Yep. Yeah.
Mike, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think the other aspect to the whole team concept is understanding that, you know, everybody within the team has different gifts. And we've identified a real difference in personality traits even between, you know, who might better specialize on the listing side of something and have that marketing mindset versus mm-hmm. and Dana, my wife, also being a part of the team, is great. She's excellent with buyers. She's the type of person that's going to warm up that room when she's touring you through the home. And, you know,
she builds really personal connections and closeness with her buyers.
So identifying the different personalities needed to build a team and to really best service our clients. Mm-hmm. You know, again, Greg mentioned, you know, especially coming out of, you know, this market over the last few years, you know, we had to implement strategies to make sure that we could service our clients that needed short sales mm-hmm. Or needed to sell short. And, of course, that means specializing, having somebody that's going to specialize in negotiating with banks.
Sure.
A whole nother type of personality to handle that as well.
Yeah.
So where is the market right now? As far as, you know, what's impacting sellers and buyers, short sales, conventional sales, all that stuff, you guys?
What we still are seeing short sales that are out there, and I think they're dwindling out. We know that the Mortgage Relief Act, you know, we're not accountants or an attorney, but we do know that they've given us until the end of this year, which is December 31st, to sell your house as a short so you don't have the tax implications. So
unless they extend it one more time.
Correct.
Who knows?
One more time.
Yeah.
And I think people are actually seeing the light. Either you're going to get off the fence or you're not. So mm-hmm. a lot of the homes that we're seeing going into foreclosure are people that were granted the modifications. And if we look at the statistics, about 60% of the people that were granted the modification within the first 9 months were going back mm-hmm. behind on their payments again. So I think we're seeing a lot of these people that I'm seeing as listings had already battled the lenders. They got them out a modification, and here they are back again.
Why do you think that's the true? Why do you think after they get modified, they still?
Well, I think they know the debt-to-income ratio that banks want to see, and they're willing to put it down on paper. But when the banks ask you to actually perform and pay the mortgage based on what they're seeing that you can afford, mm-hmm. because they're making the judgment based on the information you give them, obviously they have different financials. They're going ahead and say, yeah, go ahead and go for it. And, you know, a home is somebody's – it's their order, and I totally understand that. But, you know, again, it's something that they have to look at whether or not they could truly afford it. So we're seeing a lot of these sellers come around the second time. And, you know, again, hopefully it's dwindling out. But I'm still seeing, based on my numbers, about 300 homes in King County every single month – or excuse me, 300 actually a week that are still have the notice of trustee sale posted to the property mm-hmm. with a 120-day timeline where there's an actual auction scheduled for the home.
Yep.
I think the other element to that, too, is that, you know, doing a modification isn't necessarily getting rid of the bad debt on the loan. You're still owing that. And so many of those that did get qualify and get a modification granted, you know, even just as of a couple of years ago, the value being upside down still $150,000, $200,000.
Yeah, they're still scratching their
heads.
Still a lot
of strategic.
Yeah, and you know what? Life goes on. I mean, there's still changes, you know, whether it's, you know, a job transfer or, you know, what have you. It's, you know, when there's bad debt, eventually it's got to get resolved.
Of course.
And so...
And some were on an arm, too. Some people did get modifications based on arm where it was going to eventually increase back up.
Yeah. And I think I've brought in studio before. I think we're going to see some of the statistics change a little bit because we're talking about earlier defaults where the modifications were pretty minor modifications and they were done pretty quickly in the process. Whereas now what you've seen happen is some of these modifications are getting pretty extreme with the forgiving second mortgages and the time that's gone by to where it's allowed them to kind of recover in their revolving debt. So I think we're going to see those statistics change a little bit, but time will definitely say. And plus now we're seeing appreciation in those homes where we weren't. So people are not going to be strategically defaulting when they've eliminated a second mortgage. Their property is actually coming back in value. So it's going to be really interesting to see the stats as our future, as we get into the future. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit on the listing side and with a pool of buyer. So should you expect on when you're going and you're listing a home with an agent that they actually come with a pool of buyers ready to go that they have for that listing?
Well, the answer to that with our team is yeah, absolutely.
I know you guys do.
You know, and it only makes sense. So if you're doing business in an area, you're especially right now with inventory being so low, there are a lot of hungry buyers out there. And so, you know, when you're interviewing an agent to put your house on the market, I think that that's one of the key questions to ask. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, at this point, we many times already have a particular or a small group of buyers that this house will very well fit. Mm-hmm. And so it very important, especially right now with such a competitive market and in low inventory, to know that that when you are choosing a listing agent for your property, mm-hmm. not only is the marketing out there, but you know there's going to be a pool of buyers that's going to go in front of.
And with it work on the same side, Mike, even more so too in this environment because it's such a seller's market with lack of inventory that on the same hand, you guys have a lot of listings. And mm-hmm. so when you have those buyers, they're your listings, you have the relationship with the seller. I mean, ultimately, when a seller makes a decision on a contract, it's not always about price, it's about the comfort level. And when you've got your buyer's agents, I mean, that can work both ways, right?
That's right. And in fact, we'll take the criteria of one of our buyers and actually start aiming for and looking for that property that's going to fit their needs.
Sure.
And that property very likely isn't available and on the market right now. So we're going out to neighborhoods that are, you know, within the criteria of these buyer clients and actually just prospecting and, you know, talking to people that may have an interest in selling and trying to make the match.
Well, yeah. I think it's not a matter of just waiting around for a listing to come on the market. The agents that are representing buyers, they're on the phones.
Yep.
And the reason they're on the phones is because of limited inventory. Right now, if you look at February statistics, there's an 81% absorption ratio. What that means is 81% of those properties that are on the market are currently pending right now.
Yeah,
and I really think that ratio is a lot worse because a lot of those still are short sales. So those pendings are carrying forward month to month because some of the negotiations are 60, 90 days, sometimes a little bit longer. So mm-hmm. I actually think the number's actually a little more extreme. But it's something where if I have a listing, which we have quite a few, most of those listings that we have right now, we not only have an initial offer on it,
uh-huh.
but we also have a backup offer on it that's equal, if not greater in value. And guess what? There's only one person that's going to be able to own the home. So if I'm in an HOA community like, you know, we just did one in Redmond Ridge, well, we had four offers in 4 days, escalated well over asking price. Well, guess what I'm on the phone doing? I'm calling everybody since 2008 that's gone on the market in Redmond Ridge and saying, hey, guys, here's the activity. And I remember one gentleman specifically who put a tenant in the property a couple of years ago. I said, I know that in 2010 you were asking for, I believe it was $574 for your home.
Yeah.
I can easily get $600 for it. And that's just the nature of the market. And he got a little squirmish, but, you know, there's fair housing laws. He has a tenant in there. He says, hey, I'm going to call you in about 10 months, and we need to revisit those numbers.
Yeah.
So it's – and a lot of sellers really don't know what's going on in the current market.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we are seeing a lot of activity. So the selling agents are making calls because they have legitimate buyers looking for neighborhoods to get buyers in. But we're also facing multiple offer scenarios where we're also trying to get those buyers in the same community as our listings because of the multiple offers.
Back in the day, they would definitely be those door knockers.
Yep.
You know, somebody's out of the box and getting out there. Now it's just the phone calling. But
yeah, well, it's the true marketing that's running through your blood.
Absolutely.
So talk about reputation.
Well, reputation's key, especially in this market. Again, coming out of a short sale market is something that you may see an agent that has a ton of listings, but very little in closing. So I know that, you know, it's something where relationship is key, especially in representation. We recently made an offer on a listing where one of the buyer's agents was representing the buyer, but there was already an offer that was in front of them. And so, you know, very similar offers, very similar lending. Well, after they look at the similarity in the offers, the lending, then they're going to look at the broker. Well, one broker had no experience with a short sale, and obviously their relationship with us, that listing agent knows us, as listing agents have a ton of experience. And, you know, we wrote a cover letter. We explained the situation with the buyer, you know, their intent. And it wasn't just throw an offer at something and see if it sticks. You know, we let them know they really wanted the property. This is why. And we also let them know our experience with short sales. And we assured them that the proper expectation was set for the buyer. So the buyer was well informed going in there. They knew that, hey, we're not closing in 30 days. Hey, there's a negotiation process that's going to happen. You know, here's the comps, you know, for that neighborhood. The banks, there's always a possibility you may get a counter from the lender. So that's not the, you know, the final price. They shouldn't counter you too much based on comps, but it's something, again, we set the expectation. They went ahead and took our offer and got signed around on it. But it was about the reputation, because guess what? They call us, we pick up the phone, and we always, even if it's bad news, we want to set the proper expectation. And, you know, it's something that we're going to be very forward with the agent. So, again, it's something that's realistic, because, you know, if we don't find out in the beginning, you're going to find out in escrow. So we'd rather let you know now, and either the terms are acceptable or they're not.
You know what's is frustrating with Mike and I on the finance side? A lot of times we actually hear what's happening with an offer or property searching once they want to come back and get updated pre-approval letters. And a lot of times you hear from clients that their agents are just telling them to stay completely away from short sales. It's never going to come together. And it's such a disservice to a buyer not to really want to help them in any angle that they want to go and what the best deal is going to be. And worse yet, they can't even get the short sales sold. And I know you guys really are experts in that arena. How would you respond to that?
Well, Mike's the expert there. He's got a If you go to his office, he's got a hole in the wall where he sticks it at least once a day. I know the banks drive him crazy.
You know, I think again, it's setting that proper expectation from the very beginning and having that conversation. So if I'm on the listing side and I'm negotiating the short sale, first understand and look at our history that we have a huge success rate in closing these transactions. And part of that has to do with, you know, making sure that we're, you know, choosing the right listing from the very beginning and making sure the seller's on board to cooperate. You know, there's a lot of paperwork pushing, you know, when it comes to these, and demands by, you know, lenders that sometimes seem like they're being unreasonable, the short sale lender. And so, you know, the just setting that expectation from the very beginning and having that conversation is key to the success of the transaction.
I'm so glad we have you guys here for the whole show, because we've got another segment. We're coming right back. Coming up next in the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer. Thank goodness we've got a whole other segment continuing our conversation with Greg and Mike on real estate strategies. Learn from the best of the best on how to navigate through today's real estate market right here, 570 KVI, coming up next.
Find out why so many people are referring their friends and family to the Roselle Barrett team for a great buying and selling experience in the Seattle and Greater East Side. Whether you're looking to get a great deal on a home, upside down in your mortgage and needing to sell short, or you're just looking to sell your home and want to take advantage of the market and upgrade, Roselle Barrett has extensive market knowledge, tech savviness, and the creativity that keeps their clients ahead of an ever-changing market.
This is Mike Roselle.
And this is Greg Barrett. For an exceptional buying and selling experience, go to Roselle Barrett, that's Roselle Barrett.com, or give us a call at 425-372-7443. Again, that's 425-372-7443, and find out why Roselle Barrett lives up to the slogan, first class service, first class results.
Free electricity from your roof? It's possible with solar energy. Here's Amy from Solterra Systems.
There's never been a better time to install solar in Washington, and yes, we do get enough sun. Incentives cover over 50% of the installation cost, and zero down financing is available. Enjoy watching your meter run backwards this summer by installing solar now.
Go to useyourroof.com to find out how easy it can be. That's useyourroof.com, or call 800-865-9005 to get your free site assessment from Solterra Systems.
This is the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on 570 KVI every Sunday at 2 p.m. The purpose of our show is to help our listeners understand what's really going on in the real estate market and the financial arena. You can give Tina and me a call at 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. So guys, welcome back. I guess a question that kind of came to mind just on break there was, where do most of your sellers come from? What would you say?
Well, right now in this season, yeah, we do have a lot of advertising that comes out there, but most of our business right now are coming from homes that didn't sell the first time on the market.
And, okay. And I love that.
Yeah. They're either canceled and expired listings that they've had market exposure, but for whatever reason, and sometimes they went 2 and 3 times with that broker, but again, you know, they couldn't procure the buyer for the property. And oftentimes I'll mention to a seller, if that broker is catering to a certain buyer pool and that buyer pool is not producing the buyer, is it wise to go back into that pool? And so that's where, you know, we'll sit down, give our presentation, and give a realistic perspective of what we think, you know, your end price is going to be. And in this market right now, I'll tell you, I'm encouraging sellers, just based on, you know, where they're at, conditions, so on and so forth, that you could go up 5% in value. And, you know, obviously it's got to appraise, but because there's limited inventory, you know, I'm pushing it a little bit higher and seeing where it's at. And if, you know, we don't want to have a property get shop worn to where, you know, it's not selling and all of a sudden, you know, everybody's like, well, geez, Greg, what's wrong with that house? But, you know, usually within 30 days, if it's not where it should be, we know exactly where that number is and we'll just bring them right back down. But right now we are seeing the offers come in. I did a analysis yesterday. I was over there in Renton and I went out a half a mile and here's 4 sold, very similar property, average day on market 4 days. Well, he can afford to go a little bit higher and mm-hmm. see where the buyer traffic's going. But we do have National Association of Realtors has a statistic. If you have 10 showings in your property and you don't have an offer, then it's probably your price point. If the property is available for showings and if the condition is okay, then it's your price point. And that's something that we do need to take a look at.
Just a quick question. I just thought of this because we have obviously heard quite a bit lately that, you know, there's multiple offers and houses are going for up and above what the listing price was.
Yeah, the contract I showed you yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Crazy contract. So has any deal come back where the appraiser actually came in and said, no, it's not worth this, even though the offer was $25,000 more than the asking price? Has that happened to you guys yet?
You know, it's funny you asked that. Last year, we spent more times battling appraisers because we weren't getting the values. We had the offers.
You had the offers, uh-huh. right?
And we were pulling them right up to where the seller needed, but we were not, for whatever reason, we weren't getting values. We weren't even getting closing costs on a lot of these. So that couldn't be incorporated, so the buyer oftentimes was having to come out of pocket right now.
But you're not seeing it.
We're not seeing it.
Appraisers are...
And I'm telling you, there's one I remember. We
need to have an appraiser in studio.
I'll tell you why. It's because they're afraid of the realtors.
The appraisers would
actually be murdered.
Because if they started
killing all these deals.
You know, a true value is, you know, it's considered what people are willing to pay for a home. And when you've got multiple, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 offers that are all doing us, I mean, really the environment and what people are willing to pay for that home now. The question is, and we do need to have our appraiser in studio. The question is, because they do have to have comparables now. So obviously they're coming up with them and they're able to support that value. But it was interesting. I was waiting to hear your answer because that's what I was just thinking. You know, right now you would think we would be seeing the issues and we're not.
Well, and another point too, and I know Mike and I were talking about it this morning, we get a lot of calls from sellers saying, well, hey, I'm going to, again, the market being perception, I'm going to a website like Zillow, which is typically a secondary site. And for most sellers, they say, oh, you know, that's giving us value for our home. And, you know, it's something that we deal with all the time. So people go there and my sister calls me and says, hey, Greg, it was up $5,000 last month and now I'm down $10,000. What's going on?
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that's strange that's coming, and I will start hearing more of this, I think, is people are going, well, the property taxes went down. Why is the value? Everybody, most people don't understand that property taxes are for last year. Mm-hmm. When the county's coming out and assessing, they're assessing from January of last year. So it's different because the taxes are so much lower than, you know, so just interesting switches and
well, value is based on a history. Mm-hmm. And so, but if you look behind you, you see, yeah, you see a market that's down. You look ahead of you, obviously, it's something where it's appreciating. So most appraisers right now, they don't want to go back 6 months. They'd rather go back 3 months and look at their numbers and go
well,
ahead, Mike.
And the other thing, I know that the short sale lenders look at this when they order an appraisal or BPO, and that is...
What's a BPO?
A broker price opinion. And that is, they're not just looking at the solds, which as Greg just mentioned is kind of the history, but they're also looking at the actives. They want to see at least three actives that accompany these three solds. Problem right now is there are no actives. And so that's going to give them another perception that things obviously there's a demand for this property. So when they're setting their value, they're
It has to start somewhere.
That's right.
Each sale that goes through that there was multiple offers and the appraiser didn't give you a hard time on it, that's just one more sale that makes it easier for the next sale, right?
That's right.
Sure.
Otherwise,
it'd
just be gridlock.
The other point to make on this too is we are seeing a lot of cash buyers out there. And in the cash buyers.
Go away, those cash buyers.
Yeah.
We don't like those people that want a loan.
Well, they're not relying on that appraisal report.
Yes.
So, anyways, I know that is that's another.
And they should be relying on the appraisal report because these cash buyers, they're the investors. They're the ones that are trying to flip the property. So they need to really be paying for the appraisal and make sure. You know, somebody that's buying this as a home that they're going to live in, even if you're buying it, you know, more of a, and if they think it's the up end of the market, it doesn't matter. If you're going to hold on to the property, everything's going to even itself out.
Yep.
So, Greg, let's get back to Zillow. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, we've done a price comparison as far as Zillow, and they have what's called a Zestimate, and that's their opinion of value. And even the last couple of days, I know we just had a seller call us from Kirkland. Well, the square footage was off almost 1,000 square feet. Well, you
huge
know, if
difference.
You look at $100 per square foot, that's about $100,000 off.
Oh,
and
my.
So his numbers were clearly off. But again, if the market is perception and if that's where a buyer is going to see if they're getting a great deal or not and they're looking at an opinion of value, then that's something that a seller needs to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. Because again, you know, Zillow is a place where they've looked in the past and it's a little bit muddy because you still have distressed sales which have sold under market value. So if they're going to take your home and compare it to the real estate-owned home or the bank-owned home or the short sale and tag your property with a price per square foot, then it doesn't merit the value that it needs. And so typically before a listing, I'm going to go at a site like a Zillow and tell the seller, okay, well, you've done upgrades. How much money have you spent on the upgrades? What have you done? Well, I've done this, this, and this. Okay, itemize your list, and I need you to put it into Zillow and because you can actually log in. And then what I'm going to do as a broker is I'm going to look at comparables in the neighborhood, and I'm going to put accurate comparables. Because an appraiser, if you're in a split-level home, well, guess what? That lower level is lower or less price per square foot. So I can't compare the split level to this two-story. Mm-hmm. I have to look at the tri-level, the Rambler with the basement, anything with a basement, and I have to put those in there as comparables. Again, with the goal of raising that Zestimate and raising the perception of value so a buyer knows that, you know, here's the comps and here's the Zestimate. That's an accurate number, and obviously it represents the seller well because, you know, typically I've seen that number raised anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000, which actually suits the actual market value for the home.
So, Greg, on a seller, obviously, with the market is short inventory. Are sellers are waiting to put their homes on the market? They're getting them as fast as they can? You know, what's happening out there?
Right now, I think it's more or less, what's the plan for the seller? And the difficult thing is when a seller decides to put the home on the market, the question is, where are they going to go? We're seeing a lot of sellers that are moving out of state right now, so it's just easier for them to... Yeah, a lot of relocation for employment. So we're seeing them relocate to other regions, which, you know, it's easy for them to get out of here. But we're seeing a lot of sellers right now that are actually targeting, you know, the home that they want to go to before deciding to put their home on the market. And so, you know, and it's something that... If they're going to go contingent, it's very easy to send over market analysis to that broker that you're submitting the offer to and saying, you know, this is our marketing plan. This is what we plan on going on the market at. And so they could see that, you know, it would be a quick sale. Mm-hmm. So
well, and I think that's obviously another great sign of positive things here in that we're seeing, in addition to, you know, relocations, but a lot of people now considering putting their house on the market and buying up, which is really what we have been lacking over the last few years.
Yeah.
And everybody just kind of holding on tight and standing still. But we need those new properties on the market and people to go ahead and sell and buy up.
And isn't on that, I was just thinking that same thing on a different level though, Mike, isn't it? It's really exciting to see contingent offers. They're no big deal because everybody knows that, you know, when somebody's buying and selling at the same time, they're literally waiting to put their home on the market until they have an offer on another one. Nobody really cares.
Yeah.
They get an offer accepted in a couple of days. They're going to both close at the same time. And it's just, it's a whole different turning point from what we just got out of.
That's right.
Yeah. I love this industry. I love these changes and how you just see everything just, you know, we get back to where we were and we just go through these phases. But anyways.
Well, yeah. It made me think, is there anybody that is, you know, selling their house and making, you know, they're not allowed to do a contingent on the house that they want to buy, but because of the lack of inventory. So it's like, I wonder if anybody's getting stuck out there. Like they've sold their house. They've got the maximum price for their house. They're excited about that. But now they're frustrated because they can't find anything to buy.
That's a good point. Right? Probably if they were, so, timing was wrong.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, have you guys seen that happen with anybody yet?
No, but I think, you know, you can, as a seller, you can demand a little bit more as long as you know that they're going to be able to close and appraise.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm a seller and in a position where I've got my house on the market and maybe this contingent offer comes in amongst a couple other offers, you know, I might be able to demand a little bit more from that contingent offer and obviously scrutinize the property that they're going to be selling. But, you know, I think that's part of what's going to just, you know, continue to drive things up, at least in our area here. And especially with, you know, February's numbers being, I mean, and I don't know if people understand this, but, you know, a little over 3,800 total inventory in King County, and that's residential. You know, single family homes and condominiums. Out of that, 2,777 units already pending. So as Greg mentioned earlier, that's 81%. And in contrast, that leaves 700 properties available in King County for these buyers to go after.
Unbelievable.
And in contrast to the height of our inventory in 2008, which was, you know, roughly 16,000 plus. That's huge. And that's a great point. And it is very tough for buyers to get into a property, but you know, you just got to be ready to compete.
Yeah.
And
you got to go, you got to go with your best foot forward. Yeah. And offers that I see come by that don't have escalation clauses, I'm like, how in the heck did that offer ever get accepted? Cause you think that would just be the norm, right now, but.
Well, it takes a few buyers, you know, where, you know, I know the agents are sending them out listings and, you know, they come back a week later. Okay, well, I want to see that house. And I remember, you know, buyers said, well, I want to see the 9 houses that you sent over last week. And we're like, yeah, we have like 3 available right now. And they, you know, and you're right. And so it's something that, you know, I know that we've groomed the agents that, hey, guys, anytime that there's a shift in market, there's got to be a shift in your perception and there's got to be a shift in your reality because things have actually changed, but it's always a kind of a slow turning. It's not an overnight thing, but yeah, they have to put their best foot forward when making an offer on a property right
now. So Mike, can you kind of recap a little bit about what, you know, what's going on with the short sales in King County? I know that, you know, you'd mentioned the market's really shifting a lot. You know, what does that mean for, I guess, for people that are still upside down?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for a lot of the homeowners out there that have, you know, stayed in the home for the last few years, but you know, things, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, life goes on. the right now, if you're still upside down in the home, you know, we're seeing and talking to a lot of, you know, other experts in the short sale arena, you know, that this is going to be something that we're still going to be dealing with for the next, you know, couple of years, even as, you know, prices are appreciating. You know, the good news is, though, the lenders are still working with it. You know, they look at it the same way as anybody would when there's bad debt, you mm-hmm. know, in that, you know, the property isn't worth what is owed on it. It tends to be in most everybody's interest to try to get rid of that bad debt one way or another. And so short sale being, you know, the best way to handle that, we're still going to be seeing a lot of that over the next, you know, year to two.
Yeah.
What
I just think.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just on a different note. I'm just sitting here thinking, and because Mike and I are in financing and we're all about education, and you know, the frustrating thing is you've got that VA buyer that that has excellent financing. We talk about the buyout of mortgage insurance. A lot of our clients are prepared to go with a 20% down payment, which makes no financial sense when you look at the buyout MI mortgage insurance. And you're just in a position you really can't, as a mortgage consultant with Mike and I in our practice, you really can't educate correctly in when you're getting into negotiation, because they're just not going to accept those low down payment options, right?
Well, that's a question for Mike, but it's the contribution to close.
Yep.
And that's the what if coming from the lender. So
yeah.
If the lender is asking, you know, there's utilities, homeowners dues, or anything that's required as a contribution on a VA loan, they won't allow it. So
yep.
A lot of
yep.
times it's
just
against,
it's a money thing. Yeah. 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 Very frustrating.
Yep. Well, this is Mike Mercer signing off for The Mortgage Diva, Ms. Tina Mitchell.
And this is Tina Mitchell signing off for The Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer. And thanks, you guys, for finally coming into studio. It was awesome. For our listeners out there, thank you so much for being here once again. And we're surely going to be back on next Sunday, same time, same place, 570 KVI. Have a great rest of the weekend.
Have a great week, guys.
Find out why so many people are referring their friends and family to the Roselle Barrett team for a great buying and selling experience in the Seattle and Greater East Side. Whether you're looking to get a great deal on a home, upside down in your mortgage and needing to sell short, or you're just looking to sell your home and want to take advantage of the market and upgrade, Roselle Barrett has extensive market knowledge, tech savviness, and the creativity that keeps their clients ahead of an ever-changing market.
This is Mike Roselle.
And this is Greg Barrett. For an exceptional buying and selling experience, go to Roselle. Barrett, that's ROZELLBARRETT.com, or give us a call at 425-372-7443. Again, that's 425-372-7443, and find out why Roselle Barrett lives up to the slogan, first class service, first class results.